Good Tuesday morning to you, and welcome into the DDC. Here on ESPN 102.5, the game, 106.3 in the game. Nashville app, Darren McFarland, Will Adonick here with you for the next 4 hours. Loaded show. A lot of things to get into on this hot Tuesday. Elijah Campbell manning things, the Hillside Medical Game Studio. We're going to talk a little Nashville SC here coming up in about 15 minutes. We'll talk a little hockey. Little Tim Hasselbeck at high noon, NFL stuff. Got a lot going on today. Mitch Light, little college football. We're going to cover a lot of ground. That's what you do this time of year in late June as we inch a little bit closer to the month of July. Willie, how we doing?
Hello, Darren.
I am doing well. I'm doing well.
Better than the Lightning?
I don't know if I could be doing better than the Lightning. The Lightning had a darn good performance. I think you and I both thought they would gut it out, but man, they seem to sort of change the tone of the series. You got a lot of much different feeling today than you did yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, look, you just knew they were going to respond. I still don't think they're going to win this series. I think Colorado's the better team. I think also they're kind of poking the bear, which is good. But I don't know. I mean, Tampa is about as gritty as they get, and they know how to win. But when you get embarrassed on national television on Saturday night like they did, when you're the two-time defending Stanley Cup champs and you're going home where you've been very, very good, you know, you just expect a response. And, of course, they responded. It's pretty interesting. Colorado had a goal negated, which, again, by the way, Don Kaharsky not doing these games?
Well, Don Kaharsky is TNT. He's not ESPN.
Okay.
So he would not be doing them regardless.
Well, but I mean that we see people come over and switch and...
No. He's been TNT the whole year.
I know.
ESPN has their own guy, Dave Jackson.
I know, but I'm just saying. It is kind of interesting that he did a holy bleep and he's off the grid. And I know. I get it. Different network.
Their network is done. That was the last game they did.
I understand. Maybe that's why he said, holy bleep. We're done. I can do it on the way out.
Well, it might be the way out for good. I don't think we'll know until next year.
They will bring him back?
I have no idea. I would suspect, based on not just that, but the overall performance,
good.
I didn't think he was very good.
He wasn't very good. Doesn't always translate.
You know, I'm careful to critique other broadcasters, and I guess in this case he's a broadcaster, but I did not think he was – I think you can do better.
I think you can find
a better referee. For example, I don't know if he's interested in this, but we've had Kerry Frazier on a bunch of times. I think he's much more well-spoken, clear on rules, things like that. I think there's other refs that I think would maybe do a better job in that spot. That's just my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, when you swear on the air, that probably doesn't help your case if there's borderline.
Yeah, it really doesn't. Doesn't help help the case. But nonetheless, a nice response by the Lightning. So 2-1. We know the NBA is done, so NHL is what's left. And we'll see if Tampa can – I will say this. I still say Colorado's going to win it. I threw out the stat yesterday that I had seen 47-5. When taking a 2-0 lead in the Stanley Cup final. That's the record of the teams that take the 2-0 lead. So, obviously, most of them go on to win it, and I still think they'll do it. But if Tampa ties this thing up, things may get tight, if you know what I mean. Grips is what I was talking about.
Yeah, well, you know, you think about...
Maybe I was talking about something else, but I'm going to say grips on 40, there.
47 out of 52, I would say, in a lot of those cases, those were early years when you had a real dominant team like the Montreal teams.
Mm-hmm.
Remember for a while when the original six was joined by the new teams, the Blues, the Flyers, all that in the late 60s, and they expanded? The original six stayed in the one half of the draw and played the best of the new teams. So, for example, Terry Crisp and the original St. Louis Blues, they made the Stanley Cup final a couple times, but they were an expansion team, and they got blown away by whoever came out of the original six. So I would contend that 47-5 is a little misleading, and Tampa had not lost at home yet. But this is going to be a huge game four now. I mean, this is because they finally made it about the goalie. They had enough pressure on Colorado that the goalie was exposed.
Okay, that's you took me right where I was going next. So, Francois, he going to start game four?
I don't think so. I don't think so. I think Kemper is their guy, and I think Kemper starts game four. Now, if it happens again, then I think you have to really think about game five. That's how I look at it. I know Sean McDonough was sort of selling that down the stretch.
He was doing a little bit of that.
And I think others are doing that too. We'll talk to Greg Wyshynski about it. My gut feeling is it's a no-brainer. I think Kemper starts game four.
Oh, I don't think no-brainer's way too strong for me.
I'm telling you what I think.
Way too strong.
Okay, I'm telling you what I think.
You must have some inside info.
I don't.
You must know something. We don't. Well, is it 100%?
No, it's not 100%. I think if you take a look at Kemper, he got the stick in the eye by Ryan Johansson in the first round. As soon as he was ready to go, he went back in there. Then he came back out of the lineup. Francois won a couple of games.
He went 6-0.
Right. And then when he was ready to come back in, Kemper was right back in.
But Francois is 6-0. Just saying.
Darcy Kemper is their starter.
I get it. But in hockey, we've seen coaches stay with the hot hand. They haven't
been really
afraid
hot,
to go.
Though?
Well,
he's 6-0, but is he really hot?
Oh, okay. Hot may be a little bit extreme, but
I mean, they score
good enough.
They
to
score
be...
5 goals a game. You know, like you can have.
Wait a minute. Are you suggesting he's a system goaltender?
I'm suggesting that any competent goalie is going to get quite a few wins playing for that team. But that's what Tampa was able to do. They were able to dictate play enough to expose maybe the one weakness on the team. It's amazing that they've gone 14-2 without really having the goalie have to do a whole lot. There's been a couple of games where Kemper had to be really good or Francois had to be really good, but they haven't had to steal a game.
No, they haven't. But, man, I wish Greg McElroy could hear you call him a system goaltender. Man, he cringes at that. Remember when we used to – remember Greg McElroy used to talk
system,
about a system quarterback?
System quarterback,
how
yeah.
much he would push back on that. They get a little sensitive.
Yeah.
The guys
game
that have been
manager.
Labeled game manager system quarterbacks. Yeah, game manager, that's another one.
Yeah, you know, they don't like that too much.
They frown upon that. They don't love it. Okay, we'll see. Be honest, I'm kind of leaning the other way.
You're going with the check.
The storyline today was Avs unclear on starter game four starter. So, I mean, I get it. They're not going to reveal that stuff. But.
Sure, it's it'll give a lot of people something to talk about. I will give you a flashback 2017 when the Predators lost the first two games in Pittsburgh and Pecorine didn't really play very well. There were some that were whispering because he got pulled in one of the games. I think it was the second game. And they said, well, will they start Staros in game three? I mean, I think all of us knew. There's no way that they're doing it. But they kind of let Peter Laviolette, as you know, he kind of let people say whatever they wanted to say. Mm-hmm. He didn't clarify anything. And you knew who was starting game three. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know if it's that clear cut for Colorado, but I think it is. I will be really surprised if it's not Kemper to start game four.
Did you hear Charles Barkley in the intermission?
Yes.
I will say this, and again, this is going to make you cringe, and I'm just going to put a little disclaimer out there. You know, we've enjoyed our chats with him. This is not anything disparaging, but Chuck, he's not the best hockey analyst out there.
Wait, what did he say? Wait, I missed this part. I thought you were talking about when he called the guy for in Canada the Canadian version of Tom Brady. You didn't
right.
see that one?
Yeah, I did.
Oh, you saw
I
that
did.
One, okay.
Yeah, I'm
talking okay, what are you referring
the,
to?
The mullet, the Barry Melrose comment. He's like, he's the best hockey analyst on television ever. And it's like, I like Barry. He's been great to us over the years, but maybe
might have
a
to disagree
stretch.
With you on that one. Yeah,
maybe a stretch.
Yeah, we're not bringing Charles Barkley on the set to be correct. That's not what pays the bills. Right?
Not on a hockey.
Oh, so he's yet. Not on there to be throw out expert opinions. And it was interesting to have they had him breaking down a play. I was like, yikes! And he did a great job of having fun with it a little bit. But it was Charles. What do you see in here and on this play? And he's like, I was like, wow, you guys throwing him in the deep end, aren't you? Like,
I might actually pay to see that. I missed that last night.
Oh man,
low volume. But I
might need
to
look at
that.
I didn't see that either. I do think that the more you watch, and they're on the big stage now, that ESPN has got a lot of catching up to do.
They do. They really do.
They just need to turn it up. They're ESPN. They should be doing better in their coverage of these games as a whole. I think some of the elements they have are very good, but collectively,
it's
just not as good as TNT. It's not as good as TNT.
It's not. It's just not. Again, I guess I'll be the one to step out there today. I don't care. I mean, Emily Kaplan.
I think she's an outstanding reporter.
Writer.
An excellent writer.
Writer.
Who is still learning how to do TV.
See, that's the difference
between you and me. And what would you expect?
And you do the nice, and that's good. Good on you, because I should do that, but I don't.
I'm trying to, look, Emily did a long interview. We can come back and talk about this, because it's a great point, because we're going to have Richard on, I think, a little bit later. Richard did a one-on-one interview with her, and she talks pretty openly about that part of it. She's been a writer all of her life, Now she's on the number one Stanley Cup final as your television reporter. She's not going to be the best at that. They put her in a position where she could not really thrive. When you're doing the Stanley Cup final, you should have the best. And she's new. She's a rookie. She's never done it before. It would be like putting me in the writer's position. Hey, Willie, write about the Stanley Cup. You're going to write for ESPN.com and do the lead story. I would try to get by, but there's no way I could be the best.
But it's not about what they've done or haven't done. It's about the personality, Willie. Like, Ryan McGee was a writer. When Ryan McGee comes on the show, does he sound like a writer? No, he doesn't, because he's full of personality. John McClain's been a writer his whole life. Can John McClain pull off television and radio? Yes. Like, that's fine, but there is something about having the makeup and the personality, and I just don't think she's got it.
I think she's a tremendous writer, but I think she has personality, but it's just there's a screen presence, there's a camera presence.
Either you have it or really you hard. Don't. You have it or you don't, in my opinion.
Put in a tough spot to start with. I would have worked her into the mix over time and not thrown her into the number one spot.
I expected you to say that, and now you can throw it back at me and say, and I expected you to say what you did. That's fine. Okay, we'll agree to disagree. Ready? Break. We can come back to this. It's a good topic. Greg Wyshynski will join us at 11 o'clock, but we'll kind of come back, and we got into this topic at the end of the hour, final hour yesterday on the program. Ben Wright covers Nashville SC for Broadway Sports. We'll talk with him next about this Nashville SC team. Where are they now? First home loss since November 2020. Can you believe that? First loss. We're going to get into all things Nashville SC with Ben next here on the DDC. ESPN 102.5 The Game, 106.3 in The Game, Nashville app. Back here on the DDC on this Tuesday morning. Darren McFarland, Willie Donick here with you. Ben Wright covers Nashville SC. Talk a little football. Broadway Sports, he joins us. Ben, how we doing?
I'm doing okay, guys. Thanks for having me on again.
It stinks to lose, but hey, if you can say, if our travel baseball team hadn't lost since November of 2020, I'd just have to get over the loss. I know they don't want to lose, but it's been a long time since they've lost a game in regulation at home that long. But it happened on Sunday.
Yeah, I think fans are maybe a little bit spoiled at this point because there's a good chance that maybe half the people who were in the stadium for that game hadn't seen them lose at home before. A bummer that it happened like it did, but streaks like that end at some point, regardless of who you are.
Look, Gary Smith has had a really good run here. I think he's done a tremendous job. Obviously, they retained him and kept him on when they made the move over to MLS. But they seem to be – he seems frustrated. You're around that scene. You're around him more than us. He seems a little bit frustrated right now with the way this team – is playing. I knew that I heard his comments going into this game on Sunday how they really needed to respond, and I don't think that response he was looking for. So what do you make of where they sit right now as we're getting dangerously close to the month of July?
Yeah, so I mean, I think for starters, he should be frustrated because back-to-back weeks at home, they've had just pretty subpar performances. Mm-hmm. And I think, I mean, he said some of that blame falls on him. He said he got the lineup wrong on Sunday against Kansas City, picking kind of three defensive midfielders, which is a bit of a conservative choice, especially given how bad Kansas City had been. But I mean, I think there have been a lot of other things too that have gone on. Walker Zimmerman, who is arguably their best player, was out injured. Randall Leal, who's been one of their better players for their entire time in MLS, he missed seven games and was available off the bench for the first time against Kansas City. So they've had a couple players missing who have been pretty important. And then they just really haven't had anybody who can step in and replace them to that same level. They're heading into July. The transfer window is going to open here in the next couple weeks. And I would be surprised if they don't make a couple moves to kind of help out with some of those issues.
Oh, no. They've got a transfer portal in MLS, too? Oh, gosh. Let's see. So if for people out there, in all seriousness, that when they hear you say that, what does that mean?
Sure. So they have – MLS has basically two times during the year that you can bring in players. Mm-hmm. The first one already closed earlier this spring. The second one opens this summer. And that's really the big one because it lines up with the transfer window in the rest of the world. So all the European teams are able to sell and add players from July basically through the end of August. And that lines up with MLS. So if they were going to make a move for a bigger name player, that's typically when you'll see that deal come in. A lot of MLS teams have already announced moves for players, and those will be effective here in the next couple weeks. So it's a huge time for teams to really kind of look at the issues that they've had over the first half of the season and address them. I don't know if Nashville is going to make a major move, bring in a big name European player. That's not really their MO, but I think we would see at least a couple moves for guys who can come in and kind of help out when guys are out of the lineup.
Excuse my ignorance on this subject matter, but I am fascinated by it. How does that work, Ben? Is that literally going to the highest bidder? Is it kind of like in hockey when you release somebody, they've got to pass through a system and there's a pecking order? Is there a pecking order? How does that work? If you have identified a player you want that is available through what you're talking about, how do you acquire them? How does that work?
Yeah, so there are a couple different ways, and part of it is just that MLS is ridiculously complicated. I think they're probably the most overly complicated league in the world as far as acquiring players. So within the league, you can trade for a player, and the league they give allocation money, which is basically just a made-up currency that you can use within the league. And you can trade to, like, Nashville wanted a player from, say, like New York Red Bulls. They could trade allocation money to them and get that player. The rest of the world, you just pay a transfer fee. So you would pay, if Nashville wanted a player from Manchester United, they would pay them a couple million dollars, and they would have the rights to then bring that player in. And then they'd have to pay him the contract and everything on top of that. But it's just literally just money. The way MLS works, though, is they limit how much money clubs can spend. So you really have to keep everything on budget. And allocation money within the league, even though it's for a much smaller amount than the transfer fees you would pay to a team in Europe, that allocation money probably has a higher exchange rate to actual dollar. So it's just a really weird and convoluted system, and it makes acquiring players pretty complicated. So it's why you don't see a ton of super expensive players coming into MLS, just because there's not really any ability for teams to bring them in.
And that's why we have you on. And if you do have a class, Willie and I will sign up for it, and you can teach us this stuff. That's
good. We're still. I don't know if we got an A in the salary cap world of football, especially, but man, this sounds like it's a tougher class.
That's why I said I think
salary cap 201 in the NFL is a tough class, but this sounds like 301.
Yeah, this is not a night. Yeah, this is not a night class. This is like a full semester.
This is a full semester.
Yeah, it's full semester.
It's like someone in MLS just thought that NFL wasn't complicated.
The best
thing for a league was to make it even more ununderstandable. So,
hey, before I slide this over to Willie, I do want to sneak one more in. What were your thoughts on, did you expect this to happen? Were you a little bit surprised that Nashville was not chosen as a host city for the World Cup?
I think earlier this spring I would have been pretty surprised, and I think just the stadium conversation just really kind of muddied the waters. And I think looking back, I was pretty optimistic about it, but looking back just at everything over the last couple of months, I think it's really hard for Nashville to get a bid when the Titans are saying, hey, Nissan Stadium is like beyond repair, and it's cheaper to just build a new stadium than fix it. But also, it's good enough to host games at a World Cup. I don't think you can really have it both ways. So I think looking back at it, that probably should have been more of a giveaway than it was.
We're talking to Ben Wright. He is the director of soccer content for Broadway Sports Media. You can find him on BroadwaySportsMedia.com, on Twitter at Ben Wright. Ben, I was a little bit confused learning about the instant replay process on Sunday. I was watching on TV. It would seem to me that if you could do it over, chronologically, you would review the offside before you determine whether the foul was correct with the PK. But, of course, everybody's excited, thinking they've got a PK to tie the game and complete this great comeback, at least get a draw. And instead, you know, you have this crazy, you know, chain of events going on with yellow cards being thrown in the middle of it. What happened there?
I honestly still have no idea. That was one of the wilder sequences I've seen. So, if you ignore the offside call, it looked like a pretty clear foul in the box. And rightfully, they called a penalty. And then you see the Kansas City players kind of start to delay the game. Roger Espinosa, who's one of the veteran players in the league, for sure knows what he's doing, kind of walked up in front of the penalty taker and delayed more, got the yellow card. And I think during that, someone in the replay booth said, hey, maybe there's an offside call here that we need to review. I'm not sure if they would have reviewed it if Espinosa hadn't delayed the game. And I think that's what I'm most interested to find out. And I don't know if we will, just the way that Pierrot, the league, the officiating crew works. I'm not sure if they'll ever say what happened, but it was really strange, and even more strange when Nashville probably should have had a penalty kick a couple seconds before the one that was called. It was just wild, and I think frustrating for Nashville fans, for sure.
That was crazy. I mean, that was a wildly entertaining end of the game, but it was frustrating because, at least for the home crowd, because you really thought they were going to get the tying goal there. But,
right.
You know, I've always been sort of fascinated with replay in soccer to start with, because for a long time they held off, right? Even in the World Cup, you couldn't review, and only in the last, I don't know what, two or three World Cups have they gone to this, but it can't be easy for that ref to go over there, and he's all by himself on the island. You got people screaming at you. I do wonder if they just sort of talked him into it, going over and reviewing the offside.
Yeah, it's an interesting system, and it's only been around for the last five or so years. So you have, like, in the way MLS works, they have a centralized replay team in I believe it's Atlanta, and so they'll tell the head referee if he needs to go over and look at it, but the call still is with the actual referee at the game, so he's not being told like what the right call is. They'll just tell him to look at it or not, and I feel like it's still recent enough that they're still kind of figuring out how it works and working out the kinks, and it's not nearly as foolproof a system as I think we thought it was going to be when it first was introduced.
Ben, before we let you go, you got to be pretty happy with where things are. If you're a fan of soccer and you've watched this unfold, you got this awesome stadium. Your expectations all of a sudden are like, hey, they should make the playoffs. And this is still a really, really young franchise here. But it's kind of interesting because now the bar has been raised and they're sitting there now with 23 points after 16 games. They're sixth in the West, but they're kind of in a pack of teams. Do you think they're where they want to be right now?
I don't think they're where they want to be, but I also don't think it's time to hit the panic button or anything. I think they're still pretty comfortably on track for making the playoffs. The real question comes down to if they're going to be able to get high enough to host a playoff game. You have to finish in one of the top four spots, and right now they're not on track for that. So I think realistically they kind of need to pick up the pace here on the back half of the season. But the great thing about MLS is that it doesn't really matter where you finish as long as you make it into the playoffs. We've seen teams just get hot at the right time, and it's really just kind of unpredictable at that point. So I think regardless of what happens over the rest of the season, if they can hold on to a playoff spot, they have as good a chance as anyone to make something happen, but probably a little bit slower overall than they would have liked at the start of the year.
Ben, good stuff as always. Really appreciate the visit, and I'm sure we will be talking to you down the road.
Yeah, guys, thanks for having me on. It's always a fun time.
Yeah, Ben Wright covers Nashville SC, covers soccer for Broadway Sports Media, and it always is good to talk to him. We learned a little bit. We always learn a little bit. Of course, we've got a lot to learn. I do think it's fascinating. We get all the emails and the releases about them acquiring players or loaning someone a player, and if you're unfamiliar with how all that works, that's seems pretty complicated, and he just put it out there perfectly. He said, yeah, it may be the most complicated system going in sports. All right, we'll come back. More on the other side as you listen to the DDC here on this Tuesday. ESPN 102.5, The Game, 106.3, and The Game Nashville app. Hey, Trey, appreciate it. Good stuff from Ben Wright. We got a pair of tickets to give away to Motley Crue, Def Leppard, Poison, and Joan Jett at Nissan Stadium on June 30th. That's in 9 days. But you have to be listening.
I had dinner with some friends last night, and there was a debate, I guess a mild debate, on who would be the lead act in that. Is it clearly Def Leppard?
Well, they
I mean, I know you're a Motley Crue guy, but...
Well, I'm Def Leppard, too. I'm Poison. I like, yeah. Oh, that's those four, that's...
Did we need to put it out to a vote?
Well, I also heard, because Motley Crue was just down in Atlanta, they were playing at Truest, or I guess this show, and from what I'm being told, it seems like Tommy Lee is kind of in and out, so I don't know what that's all about.
Hmm. Well, that's a whole other discussion, is how many of the originals
because he's kind
are
of important
on the team, yeah.
You know, to the band. He's kind of important to the show. I've seen Motley Crue many, many times over the years, and he's
a key guy. He's a key guy.
Yeah, yeah. He's kind
the of straw that stirs the drink.
Well, I mean, he's, you know, there are very few drummers that can take over a show, and he's one of them. So,
there are certain bands, I guess, you can get by without a certain ingredient, but those ingredients are tough. But the consensus at the dinner table last night was that Def Leppard would be the lead, would be the top billing.
Let me just say this for people, and I can't imagine. If you were interested in the show, you haven't seen Def Leppard by now. I mean, they've been around for four decades. They've been around for a long time. This is what
but
I
so
would
is
say
Motley
about
Crue.
Them. Yeah, yeah. They've both been around for a long, long time.
And for but that Def matter, Leppard, so is Joan Jett.
But Def Leppard has been more... they've been more on the scene. Like Motley Crue, you know, they get, you know, they go away for a while, you know, they need to clean up, and you know, they Def Leppard has been consistent over the years. And I will say this. They're like somebody, there's anybody that you went to high school with or college with and you see them, you know, 20, 25 years later, 30 years later, and you're like, dude, like for example, I said this about Eddie George when he was at Ford Ice Center in Antioch with us last Wednesday. He's approaching 50 years old, and I'm looking at him going, really, man?
He's in good shape.
Well, it's not even the good shape part. It's like he still looks the same. Like, could you, like, grow, like, a gray hair or something? I mean, just something? I mean, he doesn't look like he's aged at all. Could you get some bags under your eyes? Could you get a wrinkle or something? I mean,
and we would
goodness.
Say, in general, that rock and roll bands – tend not to do that.
Well, that's what I'm getting at. Thank
they
you.
They seem to
that's,
age a little faster.
Let me just tell you, I love Motley Crue, but Vince Neil's voice is, I don't want to go there because he's like big proponent for Big Machine, our Music City Grand Prix.
He's the man. He's the man.
He's the man. And I don't want to, you know, I don't want to poop because I'm a big fan. But he doesn't exactly sound the same, and doesn't feel like, to your point, he's not exactly aged well, and doesn't sound the same. Def Leppard, they're that guy. Okay, that guy or girl. They're the person that hasn't aged, and you look at them 35 years later, and you're like, really? Like, they sound the same. I've seen them, I don't know, a dozen times over the years, over the decades. They never change. They sound exactly the same. It's impressive. It really is. So I don't know. I don't know who's the lead. They have in the copy, they have Motley Crue listed first. Does that mean they're the main act? I suspect so, but I mean, I suspect it's in order. Motley Crue's the main act, Def Leppard second, or the second
to
last.
You're going Motley Crue one, top billing.
I'm going Joan Jett's first, followed by Poison, followed by Def Leppard.
Motley Crue
wraps up the night.
Joan Jett is going second. I think Joan Jett, in my book, I would put her in the three hole, but I don't think she's going to win.
It's not happening. She's batting cleanup, my friend. She's going first on the stage. Yep.
You're leading off with Joan Jett.
Yep, she's leading it off.
See, I'm leading off with Poison.
I feel pretty good about that.
I'm leading up Poison, yeah. Joan Jett is a Hall of Famer. She's in the Hall of Fame. You got to put her in the two hole.
So all these bands are in the Hall of Fame.
Oh, I know. I think Def Leppard is the anchor. I'll go Motley Crue third, even though I might go Joan Jett third. But I'll go Joan Jett second, Motley Crue third, and then Poison's the leadoff band, I think.
Phil in Kentucky said Def Leppard is definitely the lead bigger band. Tommy Lee is mostly personality. His actual drumming is easily replaced. Well, but just the personality is kind of putting it mildly. Like, I've seen Motley Crue's tours. You know, he's drumming in the ceiling, or, you know, he's up on tracks like a roller coaster. I mean, he is a big part of the act. And so he's a little bit more than just a personality. Like, he is part. It's like AC/DC. I mean, how many bands have a lead guitarist that can take over a show? Angus Young can take over a show. He is the show. Usually it's the lead singer, right? But
yeah,
in some bands' cases, there are guys that can literally take over. So Angus can take over. He is the show.
Yeah.
If you've seen AC/DC.
Right. Okay, but let's look at it this way. Def Leppard, I think, has a little more mass appeal than the Motley Crue sphere of influence. Is that fair to say? As big as Motley Crue is, I just think Def Leppard is a little bigger, a wider library of mass appeal.
They had more
top 40 hits.
Yeah, there we go. That's the way to put it. Yep, thank you.
Yeah, because neither one of those bands would be 40. Pop, but they were mainstream top 40. Yeah,
mainstream. There we
both
go.
Of them, but I think Def Leppard had more than Motley Crue. But there's going to be some hardcore Crue fans I think might vote for him. I'd like to know what people think.
Yeah.
And we're going to send somebody to this show, right?
We are, before we get out of here tonight.
All right.
So if I wasn't in St. Louis, you know I would be there.
I'm just going to keep going. Joan Jett is a little bit underrated. Even I'm not going to give her top billing in this, but Joan Jett is strong.
Yeah, she's going to be the first one on stage. And I'm not meaning to crush your, you know, your hopes and dreams of Joan, but she's going to be probably first on stage. I'm just saying.
I'd put her above Poison at least. I'm with you, Willie.
Above Poison.
I can put her second on stage.
We'll have to get an update on how that, you know, what the order was.
Yeah.
Of the acts.
I would love for people at 737-1025 to text your batting order you'd like to see in order of how they should be unveiled at the show.
Okay, so can we have a fun topic to kind of interweave in and out of the show today?
Yeah.
Since we're going down this road. The best show you ever saw.
The best show that I've ever seen.
The best concert you've ever been to, and why. It doesn't have to be long, on our text line, phone line, tweet at us. You don't have to give a long explanation, but just tell us one thing about it.
Who it was and where.
Why did it stand above everything else? And I've seen hundreds of shows, so I cannot answer that just literally right now. I need to think about it because I've gone to hundreds of shows.
Yeah, I need to rack my brain a little bit. I got a couple that are coming to mind from a long time ago, but I got to think to some. Oh, man.
Maybe it was the venue. By the way, that's a part of it. Maybe it was
the
venue. The
venue is a huge part of it. Come on.
No doubt. So we would love to get some feedback. We'll just kind of read text and stuff throughout the show. Best concert you ever went to in your life.
Yes. And if you would like to add your batting order, I am curious of these, if you're interested in this show, if you throw that in there as well, if you'd like.
Yeah, if you want to weigh in on what's the order of those four for this show, go ahead. But we don't want a list. You got to narrow it down to one. You've got to pick one and why. I know that's not going to be easy because there's probably a lot of people listening that have gone to just as many shows as I have. And I don't know what your number is, Willie. You haven't said, but I mean, I've gone to hundreds over
the years. I think
you've
gone to more concerts than I have. I'm going to say, I think my number will probably be, well, if you count a smaller venue, then yeah, I'm well over 100, I would say. 200.
Yeah, well,
I don't know what the number is.
Count. All of them count.
I'm trying to figure out what the number would be, actually.
Is the only show we've been to together is you two at Heinz Field? Is that it? Or I feel like there's got to be more, right? Is that the only concert we've been to?
That's a good question. I feel like there's got to be another one in there somewhere. Do you count the July 4th on the stage that we've talked about before, introducing people we don't know?
Well, yeah, it's got to count. It was a concert.
Oak Ridge Boys.
Yeah.
I think they were on there 1 year.
They were. In fact, I'd have to go back. I don't know if I can remember the bands.
But you two at Heinz Field, that was with the Lumineers, a good opening act there.
Opening up, yeah.
And we had the one crazy fan down there. Oh, he's still down there, I think, having a great time.
Putting on his own show.
Yeah.
Which I didn't appreciate because we end up watching him more than the Lumineers. I was like, what peyote is he on? Because he's on peyote.
Whatever it was, it was working.
Greg Wyshynski, Tampa Bay kind of moved their scheduling around the Lightning, I guess availability, and so Wyshynski has got a bag today. He's going to join us tomorrow to talk about we'll get a preview for Game 4 tomorrow from Wyshynski, but I guess the Lightning messed things up and changed their schedule around. But the Suit actually will join us at 11 o'clock. He's got some news on the Nashville Super Speedway. Of course, their big weekend starts Friday night, so the Suit will join us at 11 o'clock. We'll come back and wrap up the first hour of the DDC next. All right, we're getting flooded on our text line, driven by Wilson County Hyundai.com. I haven't even had time to sift through these, so bear with me, Willie. Joan Jett, according to Henry, will open the show. Motley Crue headlines the show.
Ooh.
No, a couple of people on that tour. Wow. Okay, Henry. Well, there you go. So I guess it was in the order that I read. So it sounds like Joan Jett does. It'll be Joan Jett.
He didn't say the 2-3 hole, though.
He didn't say the 2-3 hole, but look, he said Joan Jett will open the show, Motley Crue will headline the show. And look, Def Leppard's not going third.
Oh, but he's speaking from not an opinion, but a fact.
He says he knows a couple
knows
people
what's going
on that tour.
He's in the know.
He knows a couple roadies.
Okay.
Can give some
so we can still
there, Henry?
A little set list,
Yeah,
a little,
there we go. Well, that stuff
playlist.
Is out there.
Yeah.
Do you do that? Because it's out there now. That's the beauty of
I'll tell you what I like to do. I like playing the game with the people I'm going to concert with. Guess what the opening song is going to be. That's one of my favorite games to play. But, of course, as you said, you can get the tip now. You can find what the group has been playing. Maybe some bands shake it up to keep you guessing. But I like guessing the first song.
Yeah. How about this one? Let's see if it's don't have a name. Unnamed texter, Paul McCartney at Bonnaroo. There you go.
Paul McCartney at Bonnaroo. Okay. Do you have yours? Have you come to the conclusion yet of what yours is?
No.
I'm still not ready to really declare. I've got two or three candidates I'm trying to separate.
Here's a good one. Paul on our text line. Driven by WilsonCountyHunter.com, Pearl Jam at Red Rocks in 1995.
Ooh,
Red Rocks is in Denver, and it is – I've been there. There was not a show there. So we did not go to a show, but we did the tour and walked the trails, and it is awesome. You talking about a venue? Red Rocks is the place. That's a place. Pearl Jam, 1995 at Red Rocks? Yeah, that one's going to be hard to top.
That's vintage right there.
Oh, how about this one from Gary? Prince, Nashville, 2004 at the arena.
I was there.
I was going to say. I thought you were there.
Yeah. That's a good one.
So he took his wife. They were born and raised in Minneapolis. My wife was in eighth grade band with Prince and Bryant at Bryant Junior High. Wow.
Wow.
He said, I can't make this stuff up. Wow. That's from Gary.
That was a great show.
All right. By the way, the suit will join us at 11 o'clock. I was just reading, and I just lost it. Did you see this about John or Deshaun? Just reading John McClain. Deshaun Watson looks like he is starting to settle. Oh, here we go. He has reached confidential settlements with all but four of the civil lawsuits that were filed against him. That is according to his attorney Tony Busby.
If you'd have asked me how is this going to be resolved, I think I would have guessed that this was the move. He's got to close the book on this. He cannot have this lingering on into the season. It's going to be bad enough as it is, but to drag this out for another year or two, he can't do that. He's got to try to put this in the rear view, and he better hope there isn't anything new that comes up. Let's hope he's learned at least, you know, that this is inappropriate, if nothing
sound
else.
Sound like an innocent man? Just saying.
The question is now, what about the other four?
I can promise you, if people said that about me and it didn't happen, there's no way, and I don't care if I had $260 million contracted, there's no way I would give them a dime. So I'm just saying. Pretty interesting. All but four of the 24 women, he has settled. He has reached a confidential settlement. Confidential. Because, look, the bottom line is, you know.
It's inappropriate.
Damn well, they
ridiculous.
Don't want this to go in court.
No.
They don't want this out there in public. Is public knowledge?
There's a lot of it out there. You know,
I know. A
lot of stories from a lot of the women involved. Mm-hmm. There's a pattern that is dead on. And it's all creepy, inappropriate, at the very least, if not criminal.
Yes. Let's go to Lee on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHunter.com. What's up?
Hey, guys. I was going to chime in on the concert because it's funny that you guys are talking about it today. We had Father's Day this past weekend, and me and my brother were talking with my dad about the same topic. And, of course, we're in our early 40s, and we're throwing out, like, you know, Sons of the Pilots, you know, Dave Matthews. And then we go to my dad, and he drops the mic and says, well, I saw Elvis in 69, and then I saw the Stones in the 70s. So I think that's pretty good.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, that one is that's going to be hard to top. You said that was your dad? I think we lost him. Yeah, that's going to be hard to top. I saw Dave Matthews. I'm not like Jeremy K. Gover seen Dave Matthews like 175 times.
He's one of those guys, okay.
He's one of those guys. I don't know what they're called. I know Buffett is parrot heads. I don't know what they call people that see Dave Matthews 175 times. But I did see Dave Matthews sold out, packed to the rim at Starwood. I'll never forget that show. I mean, people just falling over. You couldn't even move in the lawn. You couldn't move anywhere. It was crazy. That was probably 99, 2000. And then I saw Dave Matthews also at Vanderbilt. The late, great Nick the Stick hooked me up with tickets. Dave Matthews at Vanderbilt. I don't remember what was that, about 2004, 5 maybe? Dave Matthews, remember when they played at Vanderbilt?
I don't remember that one. I was not at that one.
So I think that's the only two times I've seen Dave, but they were memorable, that's for sure. They're not going to win, but those were two very, very memorable concerts. Lenny Kravitz that I saw at Starwood was memorable. Again, packed. Could not move.
Okay, here's one for thought as people weigh in. Does it influence you if you saw this band in their prime, or could it still be the best show even if the band's later in their career going back with the classics? I'll give you an example. I saw the Police as they got back together. I saw them at Churchill Downs, which is a really unique venue. I thought that was a spectacular show. But obviously this was, you know, 30 years, 40 years after they were in their prime. So this would have been, I don't know, 15 years ago or so. 2007, 2008. I'd have to go back and look at the year. that that was. It was a great show. They sounded great, but obviously they were not in the prime. So does your number one have to be a group that's sort of in the groove, in their prime? Like we saw U2, they're sort of timeless, right? They've stayed together all these years, so they're kind of like the Rolling Stones and to some degree.
Can I answer it real quick before we end this
hour?
Yeah,
do it.
Because I can tell you it does matter to me. I saw Bon Jovi in the late 80s, and then I saw Bon Jovi here in 2011. And, yeah, I would never, ever, 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 ever say Bon Jovi 2011 over that show in the late 80s.
Yeah, now because some groups are better than others later in life.
And that was their
preserving. You just said with Def Leppard, they still sound great. That's a key. Right, if you're going to go see these bands, you want to know, hopefully, that it's still most of the original group and they still sound good.
Honestly, Bon Jovi, for me, Bon Jovi was a rock and roll show at the end of the 80s, early 90s. I don't remember the exact time frame. Right there at the height of them, and now it just kind of came. Not that John Bon Jovi still can't sing, but it was just more of like a lounge act. It was not for me. So for me, it does matter seeing them in a different decade or so, decades for me. Yeah, I would. That Bon Jovi show in the late 80s, early 90s was incredible. That was in Lexington at Rupp Arena, and of course, sold out crazy. And when I saw him at Bridgestone in, I don't know, 2011, I was like, when is this thing over?
That's a bad feeling. And then there's the other end of the spectrum.
Just get to the good songs.
You see a band before they hit it big. Right, nobody really knew at the time. That's another little nuance that could be a way to go with your guest, with your nominee.
Yeah,
a group you saw on the way up. Yeah, keep them coming.
Keep them. We're getting flooded with it. The Suit will join us to begin the second hour. Braden Point is doubtful for Game 4, according to John Cooper, and does think Kucherov will play for Game 4. We'll come back. Second hour, DDC next.